It's okay to like money. Yeah, it's okay to want it and like it.
I love money.
It's okay without being selfish or greedy. You're allowed to like it.
I think I should have more money.
Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Grushka.
And today we have a very special guest, Bean. Are you ready to talk about money?
Very ready.
We have Dr. Kendall Houghton, economist and financial guide, here to guide us about money.
How wise.
Hey, Signal listeners. Many of you know this, but I have written a book called Higher Self, Reclaiming the Power of Your Intuition. It is officially on sale everywhere you buy books on March 11th, but you can support how this book gets out in the world by pre-ordering anywhere that you buy books. We will link in the show notes. Higher Self is a blend of my personal memoir and my coaching method on exactly how you can tap into your intuition and embody your most empowered, dignified self. So definitely take a moment and check it out. It would mean the world to me. Hello, Bean.
Hi, Bean.
Hi, Kendall.
Hello.
Hi, Kendall. Should we full disclosure that we know Kendall?
I mean, you can never not, so go ahead. Of course you should
full disclosure. We know Kendall.
Okay. She's like, it's got to like come out right away. Like sometimes Kendall, when we record these like out of order, she'll be like, full disclosure, this is a Saturday, but we're saying it's a Wednesday.
I like to be really honest.
I appreciate the full transparency, especially in a space about being like, I don't know if spiritual honest is the word you go with or just like.
Yeah, we like it.
Integrity, you know, just like being in the good stuff, I think being it can feel very performative and othering sometimes.
Yeah. And now, can we call you Kendall or do you prefer Dr. Houghton?
Kendall's great. Kendall's fine.
Dr. Ho's in the house.
We were just talking as we were preparing for this about the pronunciation of Kendall's last name and that she'd like to. What did you say? It would be a fancier pronunciation if it was called.
Oh, I've thought about different versions because it's H-O-U-G-H, which like.
Huff.
What do you do with that? Is it Huff? Is it like how? Ha? Like,
no, I'm pretty sure it's Huff.
Yeah. I respond to all things. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, listen, Kendall, you know us well enough to know that we like to not just dive in. We like to have some foreplay on this show and make sure that we are ready for the topic. Cringe delight. Bean?
Do you want me to start?
I do.
Okay, I can start. I have a cringe. Well, it's a little bougie cringe, I guess. I feel like a lot of my cringes are bougie cringes.
It's good that you're aware.
Okay, thanks. I was having a rough day the other day. Sometimes life just feels really overwhelming. And as we've mentioned, I am trying to cut back on my marijuana usage. So I said, you're stressed out right now. Don't go get high. Go do something else, like take a bath. And I was like, God damn, you are amazing, Melissa. You are killing the game of not turning to drugs to feel better. So my son's like, I run it. I was like, fine, I'll just fill up your bath. I'm doing the dishes. I'm like super mom. I'm folding laundry while he's in the bath. I'm killing the game. And then I'm putting my one other kid to bed. And I'm like, oh my God, normally when I take a bath, which is not that often, I don't fill it up until I'm in it. And then you just sit there for an awkward amount of time waiting for the tub to fill. And by the time it's filled, you're like, I'm ready to get out. What?
Hold on.
Yeah.
You, when you're taking a bath,
this story hasn't
even
started.
Get in the bath empty and you sit there and you wait for it to fill.
Does nobody do?
I have never.
You've never done that?
No.
This is a world of scarcity that you live in, Bean.
I've never done it. So I had
you just sit there naked, shivering until the water level is at a level where it's at least covering your cold body.
Here's a hack. If you get close to where the water is coming out, the steam from the faucet will warm your nude body.
This is really sad. This is not bougie. I'm sorry to break it to you.
Wait, it gets worse. So I stop, slow your roll. You guys are going to be so stoked. I think to myself, you know what? God damn, I'm going to fill up the tub while I'm putting this one to bed, this other one to bed, because I got like a gaggle of kids. And then when I'm done, I'll have this nice, warm, relaxing bath, Epsom salts ready to roll, right? I think I'm a genius. I have like 4 candles burning, which I left unattended in the bathroom, which now that I think back is probably bad. A little Brandy Carlisle playing on the Alexa. I go, I'm so stoked. I'm really proud of myself for not turning to some sort of substance. And I get in and the bath is like an icicle, like freezing ice cold icicle. I had been running my dishwasher and I ran a full bath right before it to let my son take a bath. So I'm like, this just can't be my life right now. I'm just going to like drain it. And then I'm going to turn some water back on. And then it gets like very mildly warm. And I'm like, I'm just going to relax and enjoy it. I'm going to work with what I'm working with. So I'm in a very lukewarm, I say room temperature water. And I'm like trying to relax in a little cold. And then the texts start coming in. Corey, my husband's texting me. Are you out? Remy wants you to cut his nails. Then my daughter, who I put to bed, comes in. And she's like, did you hear that? Was that the wind? Then I get another text from my other kid. And she's like, what did she say? Oh, like, can you come down and test me? Or I don't know. And the texts start rolling in and I'm sitting like kind of shaking, trying to think like, it's fine. You're relaxing in the tub. And then I was like, you know what? Stop torturing yourself. Just get up and take a hot shower. Not thinking, because I'm already a little frustrated that everyone's texting me and ruining my magic time. And then I get up and I turn the shower on and no duh, it's ice cold. Like no duh, it's ice cold. So I stand outside, I get a robe on and I just wait. It's shivering, wet, cold from the cold bath. And I'm shivering, waiting for the water to warm up. And it never warms up. It was like really cold here. I just think it didn't have it in it. So I had to then, and then I was like covered in gunk though. And I had been like sitting in this tub.
Ew, so I had to like, gunk.
Right. So I had to get in the cold shower.
This is so depressing. This is not a cringe. I'm like sad. I feel dejected.
That's
you said it was going to be bougie. This is the bottom basement.
You're right. You're right. And then I was just so sad about the whole experience. And I got into bed and like, I think Corey wasn't really in the mood to like feel sympathetic about it. And I just started crying.
Oh, Bean. I am going to call a family meeting and have a talk with your family.
That was the night.
This is unacceptable. We need to have an hour where Bean can just have Bean time and no one is texting and asking for stuff. This is unacceptable.
Bean time. But honestly, my takeaway was still pride that I thought to take a bath as a form of relaxation.
I'm proud of you. Thank you. Did you end up turning to what you needed to feel better?
No, I just cried myself to sleep. There you go. Who's the big winner now?
I'm proud of you.
Kendall's like laughing but awkwardly because she feels sad for me.
I think we both feel sad for you. I think everyone listening feels a little bit sad for you.
Okay, that's great. Okay. That's my cringe.
You're not alone. We're all crying with you.
That's my cringe. Bean. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Kendall, do you feel that you could follow that moment? Is there anything uplifting you have to share?
It's now that I got to hear Melissa say water. In that way that you do, because you've talked about it on a podcast and I've never clocked that it was different. And then it was like on the spot, so you're not going to say it your natural way.
You're right.
So now I got to hear it.
Isn't it upsetting? How did you feel when you heard it, Kendall?
I found it delightful.
Oh, she's a guest. She's a guest right now on our show. She has to say that.
No, and in full transparency, I work with Kendall outside of this because she is truly a guide, which we will touch on later. And I'm not going to lie, second to you, Maury, because you're my ultimate hype girl. Kendall is a huge, huge hype girl. Huge. Like only in your corner hype girl. Feels
okay,
good.
Well, we're ready for Kendall to hype us up. Kendall, what was your week like? Do you have a cringe or a delight to share?
I think my cringe was how much I thought about fine lines on my face before I got on the screen. Oh. And I was like in the mirror looking at them being like, oh, wow, I'm in my mid-30s. I have crinkle lines around my eyes. And then I went on a long tangent in my head about male podcast guests. And if they think about fine line,
they don't.
So like I could have been prepping for this and thinking about what to say, but instead I was on a big emotional journey about.
Can I just say, as a woman in my mid-40s, I find your skin delightfully beautiful. Right?
Thanks, babe.
But it's all subjective.
It is. I hear you.
And this is what the culture has done to us women. So Kendall, I'm sorry. Well, that's not okay.
And I like, what if I let it get in the way of like being a person in the world, sharing my thoughts? I'm just like, oh, this is how this happens.
A lot of women do, Kendall, as you know, because you coach women. Yeah. But a lot of women do let it get in the way of like, oh, I don't look young enough. I don't look good enough. Meanwhile, these dudes are rolling out of bed
right.
and just getting on the podcast and sharing all of their thoughts about God knows what.
Me and Layla were talking today also how men and young boys also like to wear their underwear higher than their jeans. Can you imagine though? Like if we all walked around with like our thongs hanging out and like our underwear hanging out. But we were like, no, we will look more put together. But they just roll out with their underwear hanging out onto the podcast. You're damn straight, Kendall.
And like, I want that for me.
You deserve
that. I don't judge. I'm just like, yes, I want that too.
You know what? I have good news for you. As you get older, you get a lot closer to that.
Totally.
You get a lot closer to, you know what? I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. My boxers are here. Get used to it.
Yeah. All right. Well, ladies, I'll round us out. I have a delightful cringe.
Oh, that's nice.
is it like a bath story where you're saying that and it's just not?
Yeah.
It's not. Yeah. It's all sad.
No, it's, I guess maybe it is. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how you react. It's my daughter's, my firstborn's 16th birthday today.
That is sad.
Which is wild. Wild. Wild.
Wild.
That 16 years ago I had this baby. But anyway, so we're all here. We're celebrating my cousin, who's basically my little sister. Shout out Anais, who used to be the producer of this beautiful show, is here to surprise Raina. So she's here. My mom's here. Like, we have a whole family vibe going. It's very celebratory. So this morning, I'm like, okay, we're going to drive to school. Anais, do you want to come with? Because this is her, like, best friend, her aunt, her cool young aunt. Yes. So we go in TJ's car. TJ drives a Suburban. So it is, like, literally driving a boat. And he has been teaching Raina how to drive this Suburban. I never knew that Raina could drive this massive car. She's been driving my car because she's learning. She has her learner's permit. But she's been driving this car. And she's like, no, I'm gonna drive to school. It's my 16th birthday. Cool. So I get in the front seat. Anais gets in the back seat. Man, did we have a gong show. He's trying to get the hell out of his driveway.
Because of the size of the vehicle?
Yeah. And she's been doing it fine with TJ. This is what I learned at the end. I'm going to fast forward. But by the time she almost runs into the section where that holds our trash bins, it's like a concrete like wall. She almost ran into that. So I scream, you know, isn't that what you do when someone's going to run into something?
Yeah, that's calming.
I didn't scream. I said, oh my God, Raina, you're going to hit this a little louder than that. Mm-hmm. She stops. Anyway, then she almost runs. So she's like, figures that out. She backs out of the driveway. There's a huge truck parked behind us. She almost runs into that. To the point where the thing is going beep, 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 everything's red, you know, all of the alarm systems that are supposed to alarm you have alarmed.
Oh no.
She's about to hit that. So I scream again. She's now mad at me. She's yelling at me about how I need to be way calmer. She then goes into drive, runs over all of our succulent things in the driveway. And then, you know, we make it there and she's not speaking to me the whole car ride. So I'm like making conversation with Anais about pet insurance. Then she's mad at me that I'm not talking to her. I mean, it was a really great 16th birthday morning that we had. What? She got out of the car. I was like, I love you. She like didn't even look at me. But she did say to me in the car, I said, I just want to ask you, like, how do you expect someone to react when something like harmful is coming at you? And she's like, I expect you to anticipate it and calmly let me know beforehand.
It's fair in this scenario.
You read me for filth. And I said, girl, that is TJ. That is not me. I don't anticipate shit. I'm sorry. I'm reactive.
Huh? Wait, I have a question. What about this was delightful?
It's delightful that my daughter is 16 today. Did you miss that part?
Oh, okay.
And my family is here.
Oh, okay.
And using her voice? Communicate how she feels.
Yeah.
Great job, mama.
Yeah. Thank you. I will say
my cousin said, she's like, wait, it was really wild how she told you how she felt and what you should have done differently. And you were like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, thanks. Parenting win.
What are you guys going to do tonight?
She's in rehearsal till 8 p.m. So my mom's making her favorite Persian dish, Gourmet Sabzi, and we're going to have that with a strawberry shortcake that her aunt is making, and that's her party. And then tomorrow she's having a friend party here, and we're getting out of Dodge. We're going to dinner and giving her the house.
Wow.
Because I trust her. She's the best. She anticipates things.
And uses her voice and her words calmly.
And uses her voice calmly. All right, let's get into it. Enough of this.
Jesus. All right.
Well, Well, Kendall, I'm really excited that you're here. I met you obviously in person at a retreat, was so drawn to your energy and the way that you articulate yourself. You're so clear and calm. And then Bean and I found out that you are a financial guide. Yeah. I call you a money coach.
Wait, can I interject?
I was going to say that you're working together. Is that, do you need to, in full transparency, say that
right now? No, I don't. I want to say another thing that is meant to be about Kendall. We had the lovely Jennifer Fried on the show about a year ago. She's an amazing astrologer. She was actually the host of the said retreat that Maury is referring to, where we met Kendall. But I had worked with Jennifer a year and change ago and had been telling her that I am really looking to understand finance much better and become more financially independent. And she said to me, your homework is to get somebody to educate you on finance, and it needs to be a woman. And she is going to educate you. And I said, that's great. So I asked around. I'm like, I love this idea. And I asked around and I couldn't find anybody. And I ultimately landed on a gentleman who, it was my dermatologist's partner. And he was lovely and it was working. I was like, I'm taking charge of my life and this is working. And he did all the things right. And I would go to him independently and we would have these sessions where he would do these like PowerPoints for me. And I was like, okay, I'm doing something. But I wasn't like retaining in the way that I was hoping to retain. And then I was still like, was at it and it was important to me. And then we find out this about Kendall, and I did start working with Kendall. And I feel like I should have brought tissues because one, I cry every time I'm with her. And two, she is everything Jennifer had wanted me to find and like, and then some. She's not just a financial coach. She has been like a supportive, I feel like I'm going to cry, figure in my life and like pushing me towards what I am trying to achieve. And she understands it. Like, she's there with you. She's not talking at me. She's carrying me like alongside as like a, it's like a partnership, it feels like, even though I'm not doing anything.
Yes, you are.
You're showing up and doing the work.
Her language, like the way she speaks to me and how supportive she is. And like, she's like a life coach, financial guru. Like, it's all in one. And she understands how it permeates every area, which I think we're going to talk about today if I don't cry the whole time.
I'm so happy to hear that there's someone in your life that makes you feel this empowered. And I think, Kendall, this is like, let's just dive right in. I do think that the financial sector is where women can feel the most disempowered. And I think that there's a lot of financial abuse that happens in relationships that are not equal financially. So I want to just dive right in and start hearing from you and getting your guidance for our listeners. But I want to start with you. Like, I want to understand how you got here. You know, you're an economist. Tell us about your mission. Like, why this? Why financial guidance? Why are you doing this with your life?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little choked up. I love
everyone.
Thank you.
Now. Welcome to Signal, where you cry.
Thank you for sharing that. And also, I'm so glad that's how you feel.
Like, it is. And then some.
So I was really sick. And I got sick for the first time when I was around 10. And in grad school, it got significantly worse. And there was a while there where, you know, my partner would have to carry me to the car. I was on a liquid diet for many months and my life felt very small, and I'm not there anymore. I'm quite healthy now, partially because I had financial like means to make it happen. But I think what it really made me feel is that, right, like life is so precious, which I think the benefit of getting quite sick when you're young is that you learn what most people don't learn until they're in their 80s or something. Right. And ideally, I'll have the rest of my life to know that. But I think what it really made me feel was like a sense of how precious this is. And then a bit of like, oh my gosh, does everybody know this? Some people don't seem to know this. Why are people living lives that don't make them feel great? It seems that for a lot of people, their financial life is what's determining a lot about what they feel is possible. You know, like, I can't do this because of money. That money is sort of the tool we use to build our life. right? There's other things, of course, like our family. And I think it's really about helping people feel like they can make choices so they can build a life that's meant for them. It seems to me that the reason why so many of us aren't making choices that are aligned with who we are is because people don't feel like they understand what's going on. And I think when you don't understand a system, what you can default to is just mimicking. And so you sort of mimic what other people are doing, but we're not other people. And so when we mimic, we can end up with a life that's just not meant to be our life.
That's beautiful. And I think it's beautiful that you, from your struggle, you found such beauty. I actually, one of my assignments from Kendall for next week's session was to write a manifesto to my children. And the bulk of it was about finding the beauty in struggle and that there's always something you can take away and some sort of lesson. You have mentioned to me many times that you really are all about, I mean, I'm sure you help plenty of men too, you've told me, but that you're really about educating women. Why women versus men?
Well, and it's interesting because I do have quite a few male clients. And what I've found with my male clients is I'm offering permission for money to be emotional.
Mm. Wow.
My male clients tend to cry more than my female clients.
Isn't that wild? Why do you think?
So many people are in heterosexual partnership. And so there are historical roles, right, that don't necessarily serve people. And I think a lot of times for men, the role that they feel they should be fulfilling is someone who makes a lot of money, does not complain, and does not ever have a wobble in their ability to make money.
That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. And I know quite a few men who end up being in jobs that they don't like, but it's what the like family agreement is. It's how things are working. People end up feeling trapped in kind of all directions.
So let me ask you, what do you feel like in all of your time coaching people and just working with money? What are the most common misconceptions you feel like people have about money itself?
So I read this study because I taught college courses for a while. I read a study and they showed that people, it's one study, so everyone, you know, trust it like you trust a wild study.
I believe it.
But they said that people who don't like math, when they see math, the same part of their brain lights up as if they were touching a hot stove.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
It's like terrifying to me, for sure.
Yeah. And so I think because we're flooded when we see numbers, we're unable to be wise and questioning and thoughtful. Mm. And so I find so much of what I do is just like co-regulate, right? Mm. So someone comes to me and they're talking about money and I just stay nice and even. And like through that work, we slowly just keep approaching it as it feels healthy. You know, you titrate at the speed that a person feels ready for.
And I think that you keep it even keeled because you're very not judgmental. It's very genuine. You're able to approach it in a neutral way because you see it neutrally.
Yeah. I genuinely do not feel that I know what is the best for a person who's not me. Like I trust you to know that and I'm going with you.
I don't trust me, but yes.
So misconception one is that money is math.
I think it's less a misconception. So I suppose I didn't straight answer your question, but I think the first block is an inability to just be there with it. And so of course we can't end up having a healthy relationship if like we're running from even looking at our credit card bill. If we want to have a conversation with someone that we're sharing money with, both people are really activated. Like there's no real healing work that can be done if we're guarding. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think just the first thing is to put in work, whatever that looks like for you, to be able to approach these, like, I don't know if problem is the right word, but just like questions, to just approach it with gentleness, neutrality, and like ease in your body. Right. Like if you were trying to learn anything about yourself or do any art in the world.
How do you do that if it's giving you a hot stove sensation?
Yeah, I mean, the way you work through any trauma work, right? Because it is trauma. Like, lots of economists, their parents have money. You know, it's something like 80% of econ PhDs don't have any student loans when they come out. And it's because if you're sitting in a classroom and someone puts not only math on a board, but then they put like a dollar sign in front of it, you're getting the people who are activated by math and also the people who are activated by money. They just immediately aren't going to be able to pay attention in class because you can't learn if you're in fight or flight. And so really acknowledging like, this is trauma work. If the first time you learned about money was your parents yelling about it, that's going to live in your body. I think what can then happen is because we don't respect that, there's a lot of anger and judgment. Like, why am I so bad at this? Or just really self-punishing language when, no, it's trauma. Like, that is what's happening. It's trauma work. And so is it, you know, moving your body while you talk about it, like going for a walk so that it's like flowing, getting out? Is it being with a trusted person and visiting those experiences, talking about them? You know, any way, any tool that we use for trauma in general can be applied to money.
Mm-hmm. I relate to this so much. I had my mentor tell me once that, you know, trauma creates dark spots in our brain, like places where we just are not able to logically process information, and that money, not having money or poverty or money issues as a child creates that. And so I've actually been able to use that language with TJ when we're looking at budgets and spreadsheets, is just to be like, hey, I just need you to know, I know you're speaking literally and logically, but now I can't understand you. Like my brain has come into a place of like shutdown and fight or flight. And I'm not. And that's been so empowering, because then we found language for him to be like, hey, when are you ready for us to talk about this one piece? And then we'll take it in pieces. And it's become so much more empowering because I realize, oh, there's not something wrong with me. It's that my brain just won't process this because of the trauma of being a child and watching my mom struggle as a single mom.
Well, and I think that's part of why emotional therapy is so useful, is because you're meeting it at a regularly scheduled time.
Right.
And so you're approaching it during times when you feel good. And so you're adding experiences that are going to sort of tip the scale in your head of like, what emotional note do I attach to this?
Yeah.
And so I feel like the more you talk about money when you're not feeling activated, the more you can teach yourself it's fine.
Yeah.
But because so many people in their head are like, ooh, money bad, we're only talking about it when there's a problem.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
And I will say her approach to this, I'm like the Kendall cheerleader, has been so calming that like, mm-hmm. even when I would go and meet, and it was, I chose to seek out that other guy and I chose to go and have these lessons with him, it's still, even on my calendar, it felt like a chore. It felt like something I like had to do. And I kind of dreaded it, even though I wanted it. And with Kendall, it all feels like I'm eager to get after it. Like, because of the way that she has calmed my nervous system around the whole thing.
Yeah.
I'm like excited to do the homework that she gives me.
Well, it sounds like, and this is why we need women in this field, because it sounds like men are taught to deal with money in a very linear fashion and try to make it about facts.
Right.
And that's not what money is. Money is an energy and it has emotion attached to it based on your experiences. And so Kendall comes in to say, look, this is weighted and it is heavy, and we're not going to pretend like we're just dealing with neutral facts on a table. We're going to address the emotional side. Is that fair, Kendall?
Yeah. And I think part of it is because I'm trained as an economist. So we talk about it with very specific language. We'll be like, oh, humans are maximizing their utility and they get enough money to maximize their utility, which is a very like in-group way of saying people make money to serve them.
Right.
So they can be, and we say utility because we sort of abstract away from the fact that some people are not trying to be happy. They're trying to be like purpose-filled or who knows, like everybody's trying to do something. And so we just call it utility. We're like, mm-hmm. whatever it is they're trying to do, the money is in service of that.
Right.
But that's the foundation. And so we know from the beginning that the point is not making as much money as possible. That's not the objective. The point is to live the life you're trying to live.
Right.
So even like the most mathy theory people who are studying this know from the beginning that it's emotional.
this is coming up for me. Like, I'm thinking about being in the head of a listener. If I were listening to this episode, here's where my head would go.
Yeah.
Every time I listen to an economist or a financial planner talk about planning for the life you want to live, where my shame will come in is like, well, cool, there's all this debt though. So you're about to tell me to invest in this stock and put my money in this savings account that has a high yield. And to me, sometimes it feels like, well, yeah, that would be nice. But right now the money's going to where there's holes in debt. So can I ask you, for the majority of people who don't have that kind of financial means or privilege to be investing, what does it mean to be planning for the life you want to live when debt is such a reality?
Yeah, totally. I've thought about doing this work for like larger groups, but everyone is in such a unique position. Totally. And there needs to be tremendous like kindness and acknowledgement of where someone is. And yeah, like I think of debt in the context of a nervous system. So it can be, depending on who you are, some people don't feel it, but debt can become an anxiety that really shrinks life.
Yep.
Yeah. For most people I know.
Yeah. And so I think,
actually, I know some, I mean, I'm sorry, some
people
are
fine.
Off,
yeah.
But yeah, one of the things I've learned is people who become wealthy or are wealthy actually can manage a healthy amount of debt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like a Fortune 500 business has a massive credit line. They have a massive debt bucket that they're dealing with. So I don't know that it's everyone feels like debt is anxiety. I think a lot of people are really balancing a ton of debt with the lifestyle that they're living. But Kendall,
no,
back to you.
Completely. And I mean, that's why we see that people who come from financial situations where there was more, I'll say, abundance, have an easier time taking on student loans.
Yeah.
And ultimately, depending on what they select as their education, but that is the financially wise choice. And so lots of times there are economists sitting around trying to figure out how can we get students from low-income backgrounds to be willing to take on debt to get certain degrees. And that's a hard thing to hold in your head at the same time as people taking on student loans for degrees that don't have a high return. But yeah, it's a very personal experience.
So going back to what I love that you said, debt, seeing it as part of a nervous system, is brilliant. So if debt is an anxiety for some people, then what does that mean around trying to create healthy financial future?
So some people, I first want to acknowledge that some people are not in a place to pay off their debt.
Right.
And that should just be known. And I think that's where we have a conversation as a collective about how to help people and make a system where people do not get into that situation. The economy is a shared thing. And so certain problems, I think, are best solved by the community. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that in a way to make people feel not empowered if they do have options. But I think it's important to know that, like, we live in a culture in which some people can get into very hard positions. And I think part of what is so hard about money is understanding that we are all in different positions and navigating the grief and the compassion and the outrage and also the acknowledgement of where we have room. So someone listening could be a person that truly does not have options to get their debt lower in this moment. And I'm not here to tell them that that's not true. Then there's a lot of people who, I think it's important to have a conversation around prioritizing your nervous system over consumption that might feel like it could make you happier, when actually what would really serve you is to not have that debt. Mm-hmm. And if you've always had an activated nervous system, you don't fully understand what it is you're giving up by having debt. Mm-hmm. Like if you've always felt that pressure of scarcity, you don't understand what it means to not feel that. And so you might not be as motivated to get rid of it as you could be. Because I'm here saying like, no, get rid of your credit card debt. And a client says, okay, that'd be cool, but also I really want to take this trip to Mexico. Right. And what I offer to those clients is just try and experiment. just try out not having debt, if that's possible. You know, some people, it really is like if they just behave differently for 6 months, they can experience it. And so what I ask them to do is experiment with that and just see how it feels. And it might feel better. And then they know. And so then when they're making choices in the future about debt, they really understand what they're choosing.
And one thing for me that she's done that I would imagine some people aren't, some people are probably in a similar boat, is she introduced me to an app that where I'm tracking every single purchase I make. So I have been most of my life, I just like spend, it's kind of like it's out of sight, out of mind, yes. Like charge it. And I'll just like think about it later. I don't double check every single receipt and match everything. But she has me in this app now where every week I categorize every single thing, like all of my credit cards, my bank account, everything's linked to this one app. So now it has made me, I don't know if I've shifted as much as I'd like yet, but it's made me so much more mindful every time I charge something or I do something, because I know that I have to address it later. I have to go look at it later and put it into a category and decide, was it worth that category? Did it need to be in that category? Could it have gone elsewhere? And just the mindfulness around it has changed for everything for me in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I think the light bulb moment is this, what Kendall's saying about like, is the anxiety that the debt's going to create worth the bag?
Right.
Worth the trip.
That
like that is
hit.
A different way of thinking about how you're spending it. And I know sometimes when you have financial trauma, my method was like rebellious spending, like, fuck you. You're not going to tell me I can't go do this thing. Like, I don't want to feel like I can't. That's what I don't want.
That's why I fell in love with you in the beginning.
Right?
I was like, let's fucking go.
And that's my attitude towards everything. Like, I'm rebellious towards all things that are no's, but that was my light bulb moment. My relationship with money changed, Kendall, when I was like, yeah, but is it worth the stress that you feel afterwards? Is it worth the credit card bill that feels overwhelming to you? And as I'm getting older, like it's really turning to like, oh, actually, no, not at all. That doesn't prove anything that I went and did that, you know? So I think that that's such an important takeaway. I want to ask you specifically about women though.
Yeah.
What do you feel like are the roadblocks for women to feel empowered around finances? And how, just as you're sharing them, what are some tools you can give us or guidance on how we can get around those roadblocks?
I mean, first acknowledgement that women have not had power over money for a very long time, right? Like this is a pretty new thing where you can either make your own money or be involved in the financial decisions of your partnership. Like this is new. And so I encounter a lot of women who feel tremendous shame that they don't, in like their words, know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And the response is like, well, of course you don't.
Mm-hmm. Like, right.
We learn, you know, our parents tend to parent us in gender specific ways. And so it's not like our mothers were teaching us about money because they didn't have experience. And so what we're trying to do is onboard a skill set that was not given to us. So like, of course, how would you know what to do with money? How would you know how the stock market works? Did anyone ever teach you?
It's also not a very large part of our education system. They're just rolling out in my kids' high school. They're requiring for the graduating class of 2030 that they have personal finance as one of their classes. Like just now? Yeah. Shouldn't that be like a hard yes immediately?
Totally.
Yeah. And like, this is true along, like, you know, for women, it's also incredibly true if you come from a community that didn't have access to money.
Totally.
So you might be a boy, but if you're raised in a household from like a economically disadvantaged community that historically has been really kept out of the financial system, you're also not going to know. Because we don't teach it in school, which means you're learning it from your parents, and your parents are not, either they don't know themselves or they might know things that are actually not super healthy.
Lack of education around it.
Lack
what
of
else
education.
Do you feel like for women is a roadblock towards feeling empowered? Or actually, you're right. Women or people from oppressed communities. You're totally, that's fair.
I think the second is a belief that what you inherently want must be wrong. I love to bring up the example of Like, we don't judge people for buying really expensive cars, even though they could buy a Honda Civic. We've like somehow created this like permission structure for splashing out on a car.
And because the ad agencies did a fantastic job making you feel like you're valuable if you own that Lexus.
But we would feel incredibly indulgent if we bought a Honda Civic and then spent $20,000 on a necklace.
Yeah.
It's true. It's totally accurate. A necklace that you could hand to your children and keep into family forever versus a car that you're done with in 10 years.
Yeah. Or for the people who want a different life, $20,000 on a trip or $20,000 in a savings account or, you know. And so I think ideally all people will reach a place where they spend less than they earn so that they can save some of that money so that they can take care of themselves in the future or take care of themselves if something happens, because we live in a society without like a different structure. We sort of put it on ourselves and on each other to take care of ourselves when we're unwell or when we're old. So take care of your future you. But outside of that, like, it's okay to spend money on what feels good to you.
Right. Okay. I'm going to take a pivot here and go into a spiritual realm.
Yes.
I want to hear your thoughts about manifesting money and money as an energy. My way of thinking about this is that money is a neutral energy, that we humans add a layer of meaning and label and buckets to money. You know, money is evil. Having money makes you greedy. I've done a lot of work on limiting belief systems about wealthy people that I have that could be blocks for me, right? You know, you're selfish if you're wealthy, or whatever I believed as a young girl of color, immigrant parents looking at wealthy people. And we add that on. Like, we humans give money all of those personifications, but money itself is just a neutral energy. I want to hear your thoughts about money as an energy and what you feel as an economist and a financial guide, who I know also has spirituality to you, about the things you're hearing around manifestation when it comes to money.
I just want to say this because it's a thing I've felt sometimes listening to people talk about manifestation, is that the concept of manifestation should never feel like another like weapon to beat yourself with. That's really graphic, but I feel like if we say that you can manifest abundance, that can take it a harsh edge of, well, if you don't have abundance, it's because you're not evolved enough or you haven't manifested enough. And I don't want anyone to feel that. So I think certainly if you have bad feelings about money and you think having money makes you a bad person, you're going to avoid having money, right? Like, you're going to figure out a way to do that. And so I do think giving ourselves permission to have it. And also, sometimes I talk to people and part of why they don't want money is because they feel incompetent with money. And so they feel the sense of like, if all of a sudden I had it, I would then be in a position to fail. And I don't want to fail. So I don't want to have it. And so I think the manifestation that is believing in what's possible and using that to, like, using that hope to motivate yourself to make changes, to get educated, to ask for more money, that is very powerful. And also, it's hard and it's a long journey sometimes.
Bean, what is your perspective on manifesting money now that you say it?
I was going to say it sounds like what I talk about, which is like looking at your limiting belief systems first.
Right.
And making sure that you're taking care of those limiting belief systems, that you can't just manifest on top of a belief system that says, I don't deserve this, I can't have this, this is evil, this is bad. Like, I don't know. My problem with manifestation isn't the same problem I have with love and light spirituality, which is that it fast forwards past the reality of being human, the experiences we've had, the anxieties, the fears. So I think Kendall is saying something very similar, which is like, focus on your limiting belief systems first and understand that you're worthy of your desires and that this thing that you want, you're capable of having, you're not going to fuck it up. You're, you know, all those things. But I really do believe we have to talk more about the fact that money is neutral. It's not evil. It's not negative. People do evil things when they accumulate money and power. Yes. But those are people doing those things, not the energy of money. I feel like once you accept that, money can be so much more magnetic.
Well, and I love thinking of money as a vessel for energy. So money is not inherently the money, or money isn't inherently the energy. It's the container of the energy.
Yeah.
And what I like about that is that it centers the humans who made the energy. And so that could be like your past self, like the energy that you invested into these money vessels in the past, or someone from your lineage, or another person. So if someone is giving you money, they're like giving you their little bundles of energy.
And I love that. That's a beautiful way to look at it.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the economy is ultimately, it's a thing about sharing.
It doesn't always feel that way.
No, but I like to frame it to like every once in a while, because sometimes I get very like, ugh, about this all too. And then I imagine the alternative. So I imagine myself alone on a piece of land as like a farmer, like doing my own thing, being entirely independent.
I love that. And I love you in your overalls.
Yeah, like maybe I could do it. But what I love about the economy is that I'm not alone, that I'm sharing. And so instead of having to make this sweater, someone else made this sweater. You know, when I was sick, I would look at the pills that I would take. I would think about every single person in the chain that got that pill to me. So every scientist that was involved, even to the person like putting it in the tiny little capsule. It was just like, I am being kept alive by my community. Sorry. And it's like, sometimes we can forget, because we're not in tiny communities where you like know your village butcher and the person who knit the sweater. We can forget that it's human hands and energy doing this whole thing. But I think it's a useful exercise for sort of the more spiritual among us to every once in a while just like really lock in and be like, wow, someone made this microphone. Like,
yes.
I don't think it should be reserved for just the spiritual. I think it should be reserved for I think everybody should remember that. I think it's lost on a lot of us, myself included, very often.
Yeah, that's a really poignant reminder.
Right.
That we are in community, whether we feel it or not. That's
right.
So true.
And whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
It's just a reality.
Kendall, we've taken so much of your time, so we're just going to ask you two last questions. And Bean, go ahead. Do you have one of the two? I have one last one I want to ask.
Well, I just really wanted I'm all about the tangible. You already know this, Kendall. Maury knows it. Our listeners know it now. I love a good tangible takeaway. So I would love for you to share.
Tool. You forgot tool, the third tool, T a TTT. In your TTT trademark.
I would love for you to share with listeners, because we did get very broad with this ultimately, that they can actually do. It can be, it doesn't have to be three. I don't want to pressure you to start to shift their financial future or to change their mindset around money. Although I kind of feel
that
like
that was my question. So we're good. Two birds, one stone.
Okay, great.
Have you heard two birds, one seed? There's like all these ones that are supposed to be like less violent, or like two birds, one loaf of bread.
I never liked two birds, one stone because of that.
It is not nice.
That's cute. One seed. I love that. Let's say
that.
What
does that even mean?
You're like feeding two birds with one loaf of bread or something.
Instead of killing them both with one stone, right? Bean, get behind the animal rights. You should be sorry.
I do love animals.
It's disgusting. I'm using two birds, one seed now.
Oh my God.
Okay. Two girls, one. Okay.
Yeah.
What? No, yeah. I knew. That's what I knew you were going to say.
I don't know, Kendall, if she's too young for that reference.
And hopefully no one heard you. Go ahead, Kendall.
Go ahead, Kendall. Change our financial futures.
Tools. Yeah. The first one is cultivate some practice of self-awareness.
Yes.
Like, just know where your money is going. and do it in a way that feels aligned with who you are. So I know physicists where it's like a spreadsheet and Excel, and that feels like good and aligned. And then I have a friend who we've created a whole ceremony, and it's around the lunar cycle, and there's crystals, and it's this like deeply.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's self-awareness, right? Like knowing where you're putting the energy, knowing who you are. And I like to call it shadow work, because you learn so much about who you actually are based on your spending.
It's totally true.
So like come up with some appropriate for you on the scale of like divine, sacred to Excel spreadsheet, some combination that just feels like something that's sustainable. Because it's just, it's essential self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that you're only going to do if you're struggling. I have every single person do it, no matter how much money they make. It's just about being self-aware. And you can't change what you don't know.
That's totally true. I'm going to actually share the tool that she has me using, because she, I will say, is incredibly intuitive and can very quickly pick up. She even recommended a reading, and I said, this is exactly my speed. Do you say this to everyone? And she said, no. She really like gets an understanding for your personality. Anyway, she has me on this app called YNAB, YNAB, and I like can physically on the computer categorize each item that I spend. I just think that's a really helpful tool for folks like me. Yeah. I wouldn't spreadsheets. I'd be out. I'd be like, I'd be terrified. Like Excel alone terrifies me. I'd be like, I'm not doing this.
Yeah. And I have a category called community. So at the end of the year, where I'm just like, oh, where did all this money go? I'm like, oh, under my community tab. It's like, this is the money I spent on presents. This is the money I spent on flights, even like a dress that I bought for a wedding. Like, you know, so
love it. Yeah. Okay. So self-awareness.
Self-awareness. Then just like truly at the end of the day, it's spending less money than is coming in and saving some. So whatever is left over, you put somewhere. That's like the thing. Some of it you keep in cash. You can like get into like, where's the best place to keep it in cash? Like a high yield savings, but just like some amount that you can access in case your car gets broken into. Mm-hmm. And some amount you put in savings for longer things. And those could be like college, a house that you want to buy in 15 years, you when you're old, just like put it somewhere. And I think a lot about money like the health space, where if you listen to people who want to talk about like, what's the best way, like 4 reps of 5, 5 reps of 4, like do I lift this thing, do I lift, and you can get into this space where you think it's super complicated when actually it's like move your body, energetic balance, you know, like get some sleep. And so don't let people who love to like talk about getting that like 1% extra optimal whatever, don't let them convince you that this is more complicated than it needs to be. Like,
Kendall, simple question. If you have $10, is it better to put it in a savings account or pay your credit card debt?
Good question.
I think it's better to pay your credit card debt.
Okay. So save money once your debt is gone.
No, clarify. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And there can be like specific nuances of, you know, is it maybe like a low, like a say, like a credit card where there's sort of 0% interest for some amount of time, and like you literally have no emergency fund, and if you lost your job you'd immediately have to go on a credit card that has like a 20%, like, you know, there's nuances in every person's life, but in general, debt, especially credit card debt, it's you got to get out of it. It's just the interest rates are so brutal.
Oof. Okay. Do you have anything else, final thing for us to think about when it comes to money?
Yeah, I think the final piece is learning to like enjoy it. So when you buy something and you really like it, like celebrate that. And when you make money, be like, yeah, I made money. Like, I love this. I love money.
It's okay to like money. It's so okay to want it and like it.
I love money.
Okay, without being selfish or greedy. You're allowed to like it. And you're allowed to want to buy that thing.
Yeah. I think I should have more money. I spend money incredibly well. Awesome. I buy a lot of art. And I'm like, yeah, if I got more money, I'd buy more art. And more artists would get to make art. And like, that's great. Give me more money.
Totally. Totally.
We love money.
I love money. It's great. It's a
you
great
hear
time.
That, money gods?
Kendall, thank you so much for your time, so but also just your thoughtfulness and the way that you're able to articulate such life-changing truths about the way we think about money and ourselves and our self-worth, really, is where this conversation went. So, Kendall, if people want to find you, where can they do that?
I have a website. You can just go to my website. It's myfullname.com. Send me an email. Yeah.
And she has a great newsletter that she sends out.
I do. Yeah.
Amazing. So we'll link to Kendall's site in our show notes. Kendall, thank you so much. And guys, thank you for listening to this episode. If you thought that you heard anything helpful, share this with two people that you care about. It will mean a lot to us, and I bet it would mean a lot to them. Thank you guys, and we'll see you again next week. Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Bushka, and is edited by our sound editor, Josie Barak. Stay tuned next week for another episode.